The Carmen and Yurko podcast is sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Check out the ESPN Chicago games, sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka at ESPNChicagoGames.com. Watch us compete against each other, share memories and laughs, all for charity. Tito's Handmade Vodka celebrates 25 years. Cheers to you, Chicago.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Carmen and Yurko with you at home or in your office.
Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
It is time to crosstalk with Carmen Yurko. Bop, 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 bop. What's up, fellas?
Fellas. How we doing?
Fellas.
Brian. How's it going?
What's up?
You know what's going on.
Yeah, we know what's
going on. Little Bulls last night.
You know,
We did the win total today.
The Bulls. Yeah, I talked about win 42 and a half in Vegas. We like over. We had the over last year. We hit it.
Well, if
last year was a lot lower than 42.5.
Well, if Lonzo's back by the All-Star break, then it tips it over, I think. But how far are the Bulls back by that time?
I don't know. We talked to Amin yesterday, and that was what he was saying. Like, can you stay in it, in a sense, and what, be somewhere close to 500, even if you're a game or two below by the time, let's say, Lonzo comes back mid-January?
Mm-hmm.
Or Feb 1, like,
what was their record after they played?
Yeah, when he went down.
No. Once they were in first place. Remember when they went on that streak and DeMar DeRozan was hitting every game when
he
shot.
And then he went down 2 weeks later. And it was terrible.
And then all of a sudden, what was their record from that point on?
Was 37-15? Why is that number?
I'll get it for you guys. Hold on. I'll find it because Yurko's probably talking about from the night he went out until the end of the season, and that was like, I was at the game. I was with John Swanson at the Warriors game when he went out.
I was just talking about when they were in first place, where they were at the top of the heap.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A number one.
It was about that time.
Okay, whenever it was. But at that point, whatever their record was when they were in first place, to how they finished the season, including the playoffs, to how they finished the season, that's what I would expect them to play to, whatever percentage that is.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Unless Vooch starts hitting three-pointers at a 43% clip. That's not going to happen, is what you're telling me. And so unless Pat Williams does something different than he did last year.
Anything?
Sorry, go ahead, Brian.
Anything. If you do anything, can you tell me for certain that Lonzo is coming back?
No.
Now we have to believe he's coming back, but we believed he was coming back last year, too.
50-50 shot, tops.
Well, how about this? How about this for a statement? If the Bulls are depending on Lonzo Ball, then the Bulls are in trouble. If they're just depending on one guy, when you got all that scoring from Levine.
He's a difference maker, though.
Well, you just won one of five, though.
I know. You've got to be able to play with discomfort once they start going after your cartilage. Once they go after your cartilage, if you can't play with discomfort, then you're going to have a problem. You're just going to have a problem the rest of your career. That's the way it is. So, if it's a year and a half, 2 years, and he's got cartilage issues, and he can't find a way to get back on the, and he wants to sign another deal somewhere else, who's going to be willing to sign him to a contract? At some point, he's got to prove it to whoever he's with that, hey, I can play with the discomfort. I can come out here and make it happen for you.
Play at a high level.
Guess what? You're going to start, your knee's going to swell. You're going to have to ice it after every practice. You're going to have to take special care of it before games and stuff like that. That's the way, at some point in NBA player's career goes.
So at the high water mark that Yurko was talking about, it was a ninth consecutive win on Friday, January 7th. They were 26-10.
Mm-hmm.
The Bulls were 26-10. They lost that Sunday in Dallas. They won in Detroit on that Tuesday. They lost to the Brooklyn Nets on Wednesday. That Friday, I was fortunate enough to be at that game. I shouldn't say fortunate. It was fun to watch a half of Steph Curry. But the Bulls got the doors blown off of them. Zach went out of the game early. Lonzo left in the second half. We'd never see Lonzo Ball play again last season. They got blown out by the Warriors that night. It dropped them to 27-13.
So they were 27-12. What'd they finish?
They were 27-12, Yurk, and they finished 46-36.
And what was the number that you had, Brian? 19, you said
24.
You had 42? Ryan, or
42 and a half,
he
saw.
He sets his line at 44.
You got it at 44, take the over. If Brian's power numbers tell him 44, we bet the over. But how do you factor Lonzo into that?
Well, I can't. I mean, I wouldn't bet it because of that. But, I mean, 41.5, 42.5 seems too low to me. You would think that, hey, they bet on continuity, and now continuity is Lonzo Ball's out for half the season. But you would hope they were going to be better, you know, incrementally, some, you know, better than they were last year. And if you can't count on – I think I saw Lonzo Ball's played 65% of his available games so far in his career.
It sounds about right.
Yep.
I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, you can't tell me he's coming back. I just don't. And I'm with Yerk. Okay, he comes back. Is he going to have a relapse again?
Yeah. At what point does he feel uncomfortable? That's the thing. And right now, with the way the trend was last year, once Lonzo Ball went out without any improvements, see, you want improvement. You settle for status quo. The Bulls settled for status quo. Okay, because there was no improvements to be found. So you settle for status quo.
They did.
I don't want to say it's a sub 500 team, but 41-41 would be would be about where they settle in.
Here's their improvement, guys, is if Patrick Williams is a stud. Yeah. That's it.
If,
of course, it's a big if.
If Zach LaVine becomes a bigger part of your
offense. I don't even know. I mean, I think Zach's kind of Zach, and that's fine. Like, Zach's a very, very good player, but I mean, to think that a guy all of a sudden at 27 is.
He got paid.
I know, but I mean, I just...
Oh, I think you'd agree with me that he took a backseat to DeMar DeRozan last year when DeMar DeRozan got hot.
That is correct.
Yeah. I don't need him taking a backseat to anyone. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
I think it really is like if Patrick Williams turns out to be a stud, then there's your improvement.
Well, my look at the win total is based on the rest of the East. It's not based on the Bulls roster.
It's a good East.
But, well, I'm just saying, like, do you think Zach LaVine's a closer? I do not yet. I think he can score.
Yeah.
I think that he is a superstar. However, look at the rest of the East. Milwaukee, whatever you think of Jimmy Butler in Miami.
Miami's going to be good. Okay. I mean, there's no doubt.
All right. Durant with Brooklyn.
Sure. Brooklyn.
Okay.
How about Cleveland?
Cleveland's gotten better.
How about the Sixers?
Sixers already have Embiid and Harden.
Who are we forgetting? We forgetting somebody?
Brooklyn.
We said Brooklyn.
Oh, did we?
Milwaukee, hoodie said.
Wow, okay.
Philly?
I mean, Philly, we said. Atlanta, Philly. Maybe. You know,
Atlanta's going to be pesky. Atlanta, Charlotte's going to be pesky.
Charlotte's running back Steve Clifford again. Michael doesn't, all he knows how to go is get the old coaches. That's it. Why? You were here 2 years ago. Come on back.
Yeah. You know, he was with Jerry Reinsdorf for a long time.
And it's like, you just fired him 2 years ago. Now, and it's like, well, yeah, why? You know what? Come on back.
What are you doing back here?
I don't understand.
Kupchak brought him back. He slid him under the door.
Right. That's what I can do.
What are you doing
didn't
back here?
He rehired
here,
Steve Clifford, I think, didn't he? I'm pretty sure he did this.
And then I took it personally. I was like, well, what? Yeah, I mean, so what I'm saying
is
that
the East is good. Is good.
It's gonna be tough. It's not about the Bulls roster, Jurgen. It's about look at the upper echelon in the East. You tell me where Zach LaVine.
Detroit might be sneaky good, hoodie.
Well, that's what Snorling is telling me.
It might be.
All right. I mean, give me another year on that. Give me another year.
I'm just saying, like, they've got a collection of impressive young talent. I mean, maybe they are a year away from being any sort of like serious contender, but as an up and comer. I wouldn't be shocked if Detroit is like a surprisingly good team this year.
Well, there's always an injury where someone could slip out of that top 10, you know, and then play on. I mean, who knows? All I'm telling you is that it's not necessarily about the Bulls as much as it is. Who's going to be able to take shots besides Zach and DeMar DeRozan? And you don't know what DeRozan looks like either because he's the oldest player on the team.
And who's going to shoot their threes? I mean, that's really when Lonzo last year was connecting at better than 42,
yeah.
I want to say, percent of his threes. And, Brian, it wasn't on like three threes a game. Guy was taking seven and a half threes a game. And this is why I like Lonzo. And I've done a big 180 on him over the years. Like, he legitimately has worked on his game to be a more efficient and dangerous offensive player. When you're taking 7-8 threes a game and you're making 40% of them, he's their best three-point shooter.
Yeah. Hey, and I'm with you, and I'm also with you on Zach. Zach is Zach. I know he's getting paid max money, but I don't think there's necessarily another level for him to hit. This is who he is, and okay, the Bulls had the money. His contract was up. It made sense to keep him around, but I don't if DeMar DeRozan has to be scoring 35 to 40 points a game three times a week, for you to be a playoff team, you know, that's a big ask.
And Pels are fun, man. Pels are fun. Zion's back. They're going
to
be fun.
I mean, I think Zion, as long as Zion, we talk about guys who just have to stay healthy. Zion's phenomenal when he's on. Yep. He's been phenomenal when he's been on the floor in this league. We just haven't seen a lot of it. What, it was like 500 days. Mm-hmm. Full disclosure, I didn't watch last night. I was rewatching Saints and Vikings and just doing other, you know, NFL stuff. So I did not watch. I saw some highlights on SportsCenter late.
I mean, that's enough. You're fine.
Did I get enough?
You're
okay. You're fine. They featured Zion a lot. Well, Zion must have done something.
The first half, turn it off. That's enough. Yep.
So he needs to stay healthy and be on the floor. NBA's better with him out there. He's spectacular when he's playing. So you wonder if he can stay healthy, too, that big frame and everything else.
Yeah.
I don't know.
By the way.
They'll be a good team. If he stays healthy, they'll be a good team.
Momo silence for the White Sox, Yerk. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, they were mediocre at the beginning. They're mediocre in the middle. They're mediocre at the end. They're just a mediocre baseball team. That's all that can be said about them.
Yep.
What do you make of guys like Liam Hendricks coming out and saying the next manager's got to be an authoritarian? We like too much slide.
You have all these meetings. Where the hell is your contributions when it matters?
Amen.
Coming out to me after, you know, after the season, you know, when the season's almost over, all of a sudden saying after the guy's left because of health reasons that we need somebody that's more authoritarian. No. You could have told him that right at the beginning. Hey, listen, you need to get on, guys.
Yeah. Yep.
Some guys need to be ridden.
He's a leader. Yeah. Right? Like, you could tell the manager that.
Yeah,
this
you can tell him what you want. No, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear a thing you've got to say now. There's all stuff that should have been said during the season.
Yeah, hey, champ, why don't you take the lineup card? You need an authoritarian? Why don't you manage the ball club, Liam? How about that?
Well, hey, listen, it doesn't matter, but saying it at the end of the year doesn't make a difference either.
No.
Nope.
At least it makes an impact during the season. Now it doesn't make an impact at all.
And remember when Johnny Cueto called him out and Tony's first reaction was to call on, you know, wait, why is Johnny should know better than say something like, no, he was finally saying what needed to be said.
Yeah.
And feel good, Tony, instead of Tony La Russa, who kick you in the rear end back in the day, was like, oh, no, we're fine here. Don't, you know, he must have misspoke. No, he didn't. He told you exactly what he was seeing.
I'm so glad it's coming to an end.
Look at it. You're so happy that La Russa's been done.
The whole thing, this whole season.
You've been so dour and sour on the White Sox La Russa experience.
Miserable
time. He really has been.
It's has been as disappointing as a season as I can remember. I mean, they've got so much to fix. For a team that we still think can be pretty good, there's so many holes to fix. And I think they know that. I hope they don't just try to put a band like they normally do, just little band-aids over things. Let's go get AJ Pollock. Let's throw Gavin Sheets out. I mean, like,
we're going to start with Carmen's most disappointed list, and I was going to limit it to five, but I think we got to go to nine.
Nine?
The most disappointing White Sox players of this year.
This year?
Of this year.
Can it stop at nine? Oh, no, it's just this year.
Well, I don't know that there's nine players. I mean, there's a couple.
I know there's a slew of them. Yes.
Well, I think there's one in particular for most White Sox fans that they would circle.
I love that Carmen's just been so sour on the White Sox. I mean, as soon as La Russa got hired, I don't like this.
Yeah. Terrible.
I mean, terrible.
He knew, though.
But you've been so sour.
He knew.
Terrible.
And let me tell you. Cleveland may have closed your window for you.
Oh, man.
Youngest team in baseball, right?
I know.
They may have shut your window for you. You know, the window that you had opened? They may have come in, slammed the window shut, and said, hey, go blow it out your keister.
Maybe.
The Cubbies are coming. Tra-la, tra-la. Here they come.
Yeah, get back to Tucson Electric Park.
Here comes Hanley's Cubs. Here they come.
Hey, yeah.
With Christopher Morel.
Yeah.
Looking like a cat.
Good luck.
Oh, my God.
We're going to be in baseball hell here for a while.
No, but, Brian.
When we get the playoffs, that'll be fun. Not for our team.
Isn't the one loss record better for the Cubs in the second half than the Sox?
Oh, yeah.
No, by country mile.
Well, that's because of the 12-1 over the last 13, which almost saved Cappy. Almost saved Cappy.
So you guys, if the Cubs win today, you guys push.
If the Cubs win today, we push.
If they lose today, you win.
Right.
So you can't lose the bet.
I can't lose anymore. 2 weeks ago, I didn't think there was any way in the world I wasn't going to be collecting
$100.
Right. Damn those Cubs.
So you're cheering for Tommy's Red Legs today.
I'm not cheering for anybody. Whatever happens will happen.
Okay.
I'll either collect $100 or I won't. That's the way it works now. Right. Thank heavens. Because for a while there, I was worried about having to pull a Stoichki out of my pocket and giving it to Cap.
Doesn't it just feel like the Sox are going to lose today to finish 81-81?
Sure.
I mean, the way this whole thing has gone.
Why not?
Right?
Go ahead.
81-81.
Go ahead. Just roll over.
It'd be apropos.
Oh, God. Just terrible.
Hey, I didn't think they were going to get to 500. You know, they had won, what, four out of the last five to be over 500.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for the late season push, guys.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
You guys have a great show.
All right, boys. Good stuff today. Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And your friendship.
See you, Brian.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Brian.
You're my friend.
For your time and your
friendship.
You've always been good to me.
I value you.
I love you. Thank you very much.
I value you.
Carmen, you're going next. See ya.
Listening to Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Early on for us today, a final White Sox game coming up a little bit later on. It's a 3:10 first pitch as they close out what has been an arduous and painful 2022 season. So they'll wrap it today. They can finish above 500 for whatever that's worth, or they could finish right at 500 at 81-81. Wouldn't that be, I don't know, symbolic, apropos, whatever the word is you want to use?
Playing out the string, Carm.
Playing it out. So we're going to be until noon. Then we'll cross talk with Waddle and Sylvie. Sylvie's off for the holiday today, but Meller will be in with Waddle. That's why Brian Hanley was in with Hoodie today, in for Cap. We wish happy holidays to all of our Jewish friends and a lot of our teammates that are celebrating today. Sylvie will be back tomorrow, but we'll crosstalk with
Hopefully,
Meller.
There's
and Tommy a little bit later.
Some real atonement happening.
Today is the big day of atonement.
That's right.
A
real atonement.
I hope they atone.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping for.
And they also forgive us for our sins, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it.
Since we're close to them.
Yeah, that's part of it, Carl.
But I go and I pray for all of my friends that have sinned, let me tell you. That's all of us.
That's right.
So that's why we're on early. We'll have some fun over the next couple hours. Courtney Cronin's going to join us in like 10 minutes. We'll talk Bears. I did go back and rewatch Vikings and Saints last night, Yurko, just to get a look. I always like to do that, to get a look at the Bears' opponent, to get a look at the Minnesota Vikings.
Minnesota got off to a good start in that one, didn't they?
You know,
and then
they
New
did.
Orleans came back on them.
They did. They probably should have had a bigger lead going into the half. They should have had a bigger lead in the third quarter, but they let some opportunities slip away. It constantly amazes me how, you know, and it's easy on the couch. Like, I do get it. It's easy for me to say on the couch. It's easy for me to say on the computer. But it is surprising how often coaches in this league mishandle timing situations and the clock. And I know Kevin O'Connell's a rookie head coach, but you talk about, again, just a botched opportunity at the end of the first half where they were gifted excellent field position. And they ran a play and they were at about the Saints 20-yard line, and inexplicably no timeout was called. They huddled and 20 seconds went off the clock, and now maybe none of it matters. They didn't gain anything on their second down play, but it's just, you're like, what are you doing? You have three timeouts.
Yeah.
There's so much.
Let's get a touchdown,
How about call timeout, get your best play in? Like, what's your best red zone play from the 20? Teams have that, right? When you look at a play caller's sheet and all that highlighted stuff, isn't that like certain, like, down and distance
if
things?
You need
and, like,
to get to the,
short,
if you need,
need
to get
zone.
To the end zone. I got to get to the end zone on a play. And I need to have a 20-yard route, some combination of routes that's going to get me a chance to get the 20-yarder and score a touchdown on a specific play. Yeah, you've got something in there.
Right? So
you've got one play that you can go to that's designed maybe for that.
You've been gifted on an Andy Dalton fumble. You've been gifted this field position. Going in the locker room where you already have a lead at, I wrote it down.
Capitalize.
I wrote it down. Hold on. There were four. Where did I write it? My notes are sloppy. I think they ran a play, Yurko. They picked up like 6 yards, maybe, give or take. They had the ball at about the Saints 20. There were 46 seconds left. They didn't run their next play till there were 22 seconds left on the clock. And they ran a little handoff that went nowhere. And it was like, what are you doing? Why aren't you calling a timeout? You've got three of them. Why aren't you getting your best play in?
Are you ready?
Why aren't you throwing the ball to the end zone?
I've got it all for you. First down, Kirk Cousins pass short right to Jay Jefferson to New Orleans 20 for no gain.
Okay, that's okay.
34 seconds go off the clock.
There you go.
Shotgun pass incomplete short right to C. Jordan. There's 15 or 16 seconds left. That took six seconds. Then there's a penalty on Minnesota.
There was, yeah.
They went back 5 yards. Cousins passed short left to Irv Smith. to the 18 for 7 yards. Minnesota calls the timeout, and then they kick the field goal.
Well, yeah, I just saw the coaching sometimes in this league.
3 seconds.
I also thought that they operated at their best when they were going sort of with tempo and they were going quick, and they got away from that for big stretches in the game, especially in the third quarter. And maybe sometimes you just can't expect your guys to do it for an entire game. But when your offense starts to stall, I'm not sure why Kevin O'Connell wasn't quicker to get back into some of that. It was an exciting fourth quarter. But look, the Vikings do look dangerous with what they present offensively. They do. The Bears don't have a Marshawn Lattimore.
No.
And Marshawn Lattimore was all over the field with Justin Jefferson, and Justin Jefferson went for nearly 150 yards.
Yep, 147.
It's a little scary, you know? Like, the Bears, I don't know that the Bears have a good way to defend Justin Jefferson. I'll give O'Connell credit for this. They've done a very good job in a couple of games this year, the Packer game in week one, this game last week in London. Now, he's so good, he's just going to get himself open a lot. There was the big play, the big bomb at the end of the game that set them up for the game-winning field goal, where he was one-on-one on the outside with Marshawn Lattimore, and he just beat him. Justin Jefferson is good enough to do that. But they use him in bunch formations. They put him in the slot. They had him in the backfield. They motioned him in the backfield, and they had him on a little option route at one point that they had an easy completion on. They've been very creative at moving him around, getting him in space, getting like scheming him open a little. And then when you need him to just win, there are times when they're like, okay, Justin, you might be the best receiver in the league. Now go line up against their best corner and go get open. And he can do that. So it's a little scary, I think, as the Bears go in there on Sunday. I don't think they have a great answer for what Minnesota can do on the ground. And they certainly, I don't think, present a great answer for stopping Justin Jefferson.
If the Bears defense can't figure out their run defense, if whatever they've been doing, which has been wrong, if they can't get figured out, Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison are going to have themselves a party.
So
all right, it's going to be another party. It's going to be another 250-plus day on the ground for the Minnesota Vikings. That may be the only thing that stops Justin Jefferson.
Interesting.
Okay, that may be the only thing. And I'm worried about the Chicago Bears this week going up there. I'm worried about them.
They're a seven-point dog.
Seven-point dog. I'm worried. Usually the Bears respond in this situation. They keep it close. They keep it tight. They keep it tight. They keep it tight. I was not expecting the Bears' run defense to be this horrifically poor or bad. I was not. I didn't think this was possible. I didn't think defense, Eberflus being a defensive-minded coach, I didn't think there'd be such incompetence on the defensive line. And I know you changed people out, but what I'm looking at is incompetence. Zero football sense, zero football knowledge, you know, as far as the players. Feels like they play with tunnel vision. That's all they say. They see what their assignment is in their world and their scope of the football field. It's only 100 yards long. It's only 53 and a third yards wide. And they put this tunnel vision on. This is my job. This is my job. And this is the only thing I should do. Boom, 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 boom. Don't see anything. Don't look at anything. Boom. Just let me do my job and my job only. And I really disappointed in the way this defense
played. Why do you think that's happened?
I don't know. I don't know. At some point, football sense. At some point, you're a football player. At some point, you're responsible for what you're doing on the football field. It can't just be, I do my assignment and that's it. Yeah, you do your assignment. But football sense and football knowledge dictates when that's over. And the ball is the issue. The ball's always the issue. So with the ball being the issue, my football sense takes over after my assignment. I've got an assignment. The quarterback drops the ball on the ground. Center QB exchange problem. Do I continue on with my assignment? Or do I go attack the damn football?
Attack the football.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the kind of stuff that's going out. He goes and the quarterback turns the wrong way. I've got my assignment, right? And he goes and fakes a handoff to nobody. Do I stick with my assignment, what the fake might have been, or do I see the football and I know, okay, this is a blown, broken play. I go make the play.
The
right. So there's
go where the football
two examples that are, you know, way out to a certain side where obviously the ball is the issue and obviously you go do this, but there's other areas on the field where football sense and common sense and just football knowledge takes over and dictates that you abandon what your assignment is and now you go make a play.
Well, Moose talked about that on the broadcast. Yeah. So that's what you mean, right? When you hear like eyes, you got to have like, where are your eyes?
Yes.
Are you finding the football as a defensive player?
Right.
Like, you know, and it was ugly. How do they fix that? We'll see. They've got talent in that backfield in Minnesota. By the numbers, they've been just in middle of the pack rushing attack this year in terms of yards per attempt in terms of expected points added by their running game. The Bears have been exceptional. It's the only area offensively they've been exceptional. They're top five in both those categories. Vikings sort of middle of the pack, but could they carve the Bears up? If they don't correct some things from the last couple of weeks, they sure could. We'll talk more about that with Courtney Cronin coming up next. If you want to join us at any point today to talk Bears, Aaron Judge, the end of the baseball season, Bulls, anything. They tipped off the preseason last night. Feel free to ring us up at 312-332-3776. An update from Hal is coming up next. Calling all whiskey lovers, the Wiseman Bourbon from Kentucky Owl is the perfect blend of four Kentucky straight bourbon whiskeys. Caramel, allspice, citrus fill the nose, and then similar tastes across the tongue into a wonderful finish. Stay tuned because we have another Whiskey U coming up later this month where you can try Kentucky Owl with us. Stay tuned for details. They are coming soon.
Working from home? We're back in the office. Don't miss a minute of Carmen and Yurko. Just ask your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Happy hump day on early today. We'll be back in our normal time slot tomorrow. Really, I think for the rest of the year, the moving and shaking should be done now that baseball's done for the White Sox. We're going to carry a bunch of playoff games, but those games will be at night. Looking forward to October baseball. Can't believe, well, shouldn't say I can't believe. I guess I started to believe sometime like around the All-Star break or early August.
That, yeah, you can believe.
Yeah, I mean, it took me a big portion of the year to want to believe maybe or want to accept the fact that the White Sox weren't going to be playing in October. But that's the case. That's the reality. So early on today for us, Waddle and Sylvie are going to be in from noon to about 2:30, then the pregame show with Connor for the final game of the year. So back in our normal time slot the rest of the week. And Friday, we are out and about. It's a football Friday. Once again, come see us, have lunch at Hooters, have a cold beer. We'll talk plenty of Bears, Vikings, and week five in the NFL. We're going to be at the Hooters on South LaGrange Road on the south side in Orland Park from noon to 2:30. We hope to see you there. Right now, we go up to Hallis Hall. We bring in Courtney Cronin from ESPN and ESPN.com. She is brought to you by ETI School of Skilled Trade. Back to work Wednesday. Courtney, how you doing up there first and foremost?
I'm doing great, guys. We're just getting ready to go through another one of these Wednesdays, and tomorrow we'll see what sort of excuses they want to make for why the offense didn't work again last week. So just getting ready for all that.
Yeah, you'll have the Luke Getsy experience tomorrow, and we have already detailed this. I mean, the last couple of visits with you, they can pretend all they want. They obviously, there are just things they're doing in their decision making and their play calling that show you they don't totally trust this offense. I mean, they're just playing very conservatively. My fear is that, like, you know, even if they had Patrick Mahomes, Matt Eberflus just might be one of those old school, like, yeah, it's 1970. This is the way we got to play football. That's my like big picture, long term fear. I don't know. I mean, it's maybe hard to read or gauge that right now, but he just might be one of those very conservative minded head coaches, Courtney.
You know, I think a lot of times you get that with defensive head coaches. I mean, I covered one for 5 years in Minnesota who Mike Zimmer wanted to win with running the ball, playing conservatively, not turning the ball over, and winning games with your defense. And there's certain teams that can do those things. I know that the 2017 Vikings did it, the 2017 Jaguars did it, but by and large, you end up running into a juggernaut that is actually able to field a competent offensive team, and that's where you lose games. Like, you can play conservatively, and you can call games conservatively because you're worried about how your personnel is going to handle certain situations, but you can only do that so often. So I can understand the fear right now, and I think sometimes that comes with the MO of more defensive-minded head coaches, and especially somebody who has a defensive background and is working with a young quarterback who's trying to figure it out. And even when they're doing things that are supposed to play to his strengths, like I just tweeted out a bunch of stats that I dug up on play action, like Fields is not doing well on play action. That's supposed to be like the fail safe for yeah. where you, like, you know, get him out of a jam, roll him away from pressure, try to get him to make plays on the run. And that's not happening. So I do understand there's a concern probably from this coaching staff of, well, we got to call games in a way that's kind of like in spite of the quarterback to be able to survive.
You know, as a former defensive player, my partner over here has been despondent all week watching this team try to play defense. That's the other element of all of what's going on here and what's gone so terribly wrong. Now, to their credit, they've made some halftime adjustments. They've been much better in second halves of games, but they played four games and twice they've been carved up for over 200 yards on the ground. That's bad. Mm-hmm. And they were really some simple mistakes that just
rudimentary
stuff last week. How do they fix that, Courtney?
Well, I mean, you don't bite on play action. And I remember, like, I know that sounds so simple, and I get annoyed with players afterwards when it's just like, got to go back to our fundamentals, got to go to the technique, all that. Well, what does that actually mean? Like, I'm not asking the question because I know the answer. I'm asking because I want to know. And so this one time I got so frustrated with Anthony Barr in Minnesota. I'm like, all right, middle linebacker, walk me through this. What am I looking at on an offensive lineman's shoulders, on his hips, to tell me if it's going to be a pass or a run? And we actually, because I was so aggressive in the way I went through it, that's how I figured out how you don't bite on play action, because there's certain tells when a quarterback drops back and whether he's going to sell a ball fake or whether he's going to throw the ball that those players have to figure out. And I know that, you know, Jaquan Brisker talked about it earlier this week, that they were anticipating Daniel Jones to use a heavy dose of that. I don't think they were anticipating Daniel Jones running free twice to the end zone. He's not exactly, I mean, he's had some good runs in his career, but not the way that he did on Sunday. So I think it truly is that you have to go back to dumbing it down in a way of like, this is what it looks like when they're trying to sell a ball fake to the right, to the left. This is like what depth this quarterback's dropping back at. Here's what you have to look at in an offensive lineman's hips, his shoulders, all things like that, because you can't bite on it that often. And sometimes there's rookie mistakes. I can still think of the big gain that Aaron Rodgers had off play action in week two, where Kyler Gordon got burned on that. And that's okay. Like, stuff like that's going to happen. But when it repeatedly happens and they're repeatedly killing you with the same thing over and over again, that's something about the way that it's not being taught or the way that players are not picking it up in practice. So it's not just, oh, missed tackles, this, that, and the other thing. Although 94 of Saquon Barkley's rushing yards on Sunday came after first contact. So that's kind of a glaring stat. You know, he rushed for 146 yards and 31 carries. You know that they're trying to beat you on the ground because the quarterback's not throwing the ball all that much. But there's got to be a better way to force contain in a lot of situations than they have been, because they were getting blown up off play action for chunk plays, and it just kept happening repeatedly. And that was just a really easy way for the Giants to exploit a weakness in this team that has existed the entire season.
When the players look at film, the players know whether they're open or not. The receivers don't. They know, hey, I'm open. Why aren't I getting the football? Has there been a sense of frustration out of the receivers with their quarterback and his inability to find them?
I wouldn't, you know, guys are going to be really careful with what they say, especially, you know, a player like Darnell Mooney, who really is the face of that receiver room, in spite of the fact that he hasn't gotten the ball that often. You know, I could sense some frustration when you hear him talk on Monday towards the end of his press conference, when it's like, well, you know, what do you do with a situation like this? And I'm fairly certain, you know, his direct quote was, I don't really know. Like, he said that, you know, there's things that they do in practice that they execute, and like, they feel dominant during practice doing that, but then it comes to games and then they don't. So like, he kind of like seemed pretty flabbergasted by the whole thing. It's like, you don't know what the issues are, because, you know, they're having a chance to see what they're going to do in the game in practice, and they're executing it well in practice. But the decision-making, just the entire process and execution in games doesn't seem to be translating over. So I think that that's the frustration with players, where it's like, why can't we carry over what we did Wednesday through Friday into a game? Because it's not like they're changing everything up on a day-to-day basis. Like, they install everything Wednesday. They're going through it, especially on first and second down. Like, the red zone period's Friday. They were in the red zone three times this past weekend, and they didn't get a touchdown out of it. So, like, clearly that's something that has to be a focal point this week for them, in figuring out how they can get down there so many times, but just not turning that into touchdowns. That's probably where the frustration with most players lies, because they get so close, but then they're still so far back from where they want to be.
All right, before we let you go, and I'm glad you mentioned this at the start, and you wrote, Courtney's got a story up about this. I encourage everybody to read it at ESPN.com. But just on your Twitter, a couple of the things about play action. First of all, I love play action. I think you need, teams need more of it. You don't. The data has proven more and more as the years go by that you do not need to have a good running game to effectively run play action pass. It is a great indicator of who does well in EPA per play, how efficient passing offenses are. Bears have a good running game, so it should, I guess, in theory, help even more. But you need play action. And you've detailed it here. Chicago's using play action on 28% of fields as dropbacks. The funny thing is that if you look at the Pro Football Reference data in terms of his pure pass attempts off of play action, he ranks 28th. So, again, it comes to a lot of the issues where he's either not pulling the trigger or he's taking off too soon or the line's not doing its job. You have further numbers here to talk about the struggles when they should be succeeding with play action, considering he did last year. In 2022, Fields has 11 design rollout dropbacks, tied for 8th most. His QBR on those plays is 31st. In 2021, his QBR on those rollouts was 87th. And then the play action numbers somewhat similar. In 2021, he had a 56 QBR, completed 63% of his passes, and those numbers are not as good this year. That's very long-winded, but why in the hell is it all happening? What is going so wrong in these first four games?
I think some of it is a hesitancy, like you had mentioned, and whether it's on play action, whether it's on, because there have been some design rollouts where he's out of the pocket and he's waiting, and either he doesn't think somebody's open or they truly are covered and he doesn't want to throw to a spot, so then he continues to take off running and he goes to the sideline or he slides. And I think that there has to be a dose of, you've got to wait back in the pocket longer before. I mean, and this is just like straight up pocket presence, what I'm thinking of. In terms of like the play action, I think it's because like teams can, once you're selling out for that and once you make it obvious that you're trying to do that, teams can pick up on that fairly quickly. Like they knew, I think, at least most teams did, that, you know, the idea was more play action, more rollouts for this quarterback, so they're not buying the ball fake. I mean, it's kind of hard to do. You know, it's, you know, and I just feel like, you know, with where receivers run their routes and the patterns and all things like that, I think you just kind of need to alter what you're asking them to do on these specific plays just to be able to get a quick passing game going. We're not saying like deep shots off of play action every single time, but just to be able to get guys moving and almost kind of run a hurry up style of offense just to catch a team off guard. And so they can't tell as quickly if you're using play action or not. I mean, there are a lot of things that factor into it. I just still go back to, and this wasn't a play action pass, like he's had time in the pocket. I know everybody thinks it's fun to blame the offensive line. Sacks are not entirely on the offensive line. Like, if you don't know that by now, then educate yourself. Sacks a lot of times are on the quarterback. And there have been times where he even said it himself that he felt he had all day to throw back there, and then he just didn't. And so, you know, it's a combination of things. And that's what I wrote in my piece today. Like, these numbers aren't sustainable. God, we all know that. But how do you fix it? And the blame goes around fairly evenly. It's not just receivers being covered, and these are not most times. Like, it's not just, you know, the offensive line struggling in pass protection at times, and it's not all on the quarterback. But there's a lot of that goes hand in hand to how you sell play action up front so the quarterback can do his job. And if you're not doing that, then that's probably why that play is getting blown up.
Courtney, good stuff. We appreciate it. And we will catch up again next week. All right.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you. There's Courtney Cronin, brought to you by ETI School of Skilled Trade. It's Carmen and Yurko. We'll be right back.
This hour brought to you by Twin Peaks. Got an appetite for football? Head to your favorite Twin Peaks and catch games all weekend. Grab a 29-degree draft beer and enjoy 360 degrees of TVs.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
See what we're up to.
See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
You start digging into the Bears' metrics, man. It's ugly. You know, all the problems they've had stopping the run. Yurko's detailed those at great lengths for you, especially after week two and after last week. The Packer game and the Giant game were where it really reared its ugly head, their two losses. It is a somewhat, I guess,
stunning is too strong of a word that they're 2-2 because the league, we've also documented the amazing amount of parity in this league right now.
But when you dig into their metrics, the problems against the run, all their ineptness as far as a passing offense is concerned, they have run the ball extremely well. You go, wow, 2-2. But that's where they find themselves going into the 3-1 Minnesota Vikings in week five.
Right. I realize the development of the quarterback's the important thing. Yeah. I realize that. Everybody realizes that. Hey, let's focus. Even though you traded out some of your talent that you had defensively, you got rid of Goldman, you got rid of Hicks, you got rid of Khalil Mack. You know, you're willing to say goodbye to a lot of people, some linebackers you're willing to say goodbye to. You made the decision to go ahead and have some dead cap money so you can get it back and you can utilize it next year the way you want to. Identifying the talent you like, you're going to bring them in here and you're going to do things. It's the simple things that bother me.
Mm-hmm.
It's the stuff that doesn't, just the paying attention to details that bothers me. The least talented player in the world can pay attention to details and be in the right spot at the right time. Now you have to be an athlete and you have to be athletic and you have to be at the top of your game to be able to make plays. But the least talented individual can be at a certain spot at a certain time just because you're following what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Here I am. Okay, I'm here now. Now I may not have the speed. I may not have the agility. I may not have the requisite amount of toughness and or strength to be able to make that play. But to just do the simple things and to clear your responsibility and then converge on the ball. It just, the way they play is, I never, ever, ever thought this defense would play the way this defense is playing right now.
Well said, Jerry.
Where the defensive line in the front seven is an absolute God-forbidden weakness on this team. And it's terrible. You'd say youthful secondary would be a problem. It's not.
Well, it is.
Well, but compared to what their major problem is,
yeah, I see what you're
they've
saying.
They've got a major problem, yeah, all right?
I got you.
So I go down to the basement, right? And I take a look. I got some water coming into sump pump, but my wall is blown out.
That's amazing.
And I've got to identify what my major problem is, and then, okay, I also need a new sump pump, all right?
Call Permaseal.
My major problem is the breach in the basement wall.
Right.
Not necessarily the sump pump not working.
I got
okay?
you.
So... Yeah, though so it may be an area of concern.
The pump, but the front seven is the
front seven
breach,
is the breach
wall.
In the wall.
I
got
you.
That's my problem. So I can't believe it's that bad. I just can't. I look at it. It's over and over. Then I watch it happen, and I'm like, what are they seeing that they don't recognize? And that's my biggest problem.
We'll talk more Bears in NFL coming up during the 11 o'clock hour. We will crosstalk about an hour from now with Waddle and Sylvie. Midway Jeff Meller is going to be in with Waddle for Sylvie today. White Sox baseball a little bit later on. Also, Connor McKnight coming up. And what would you do with home run ball number 62? We'll discuss. We're back in 2 minutes.